this.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-Africa news and world developments. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington, and on Africa News Tonight, Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield, U.S. representative to the United Nations, will deliver a keynote address in Accra, Ghana, on the global food security crisis tomorrow. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Three of the four candidates running in Kenya's presidential election next week have female running mates, including the frontrunner and former Prime Minister of Kenya, Raila Odinga. VOA's Africa 54 managing editor Vincent Makori says it is a significant breakthrough for women trying to reach the upper echelons of power in Kenya.
I see this as a very big push for women to come to the center of the political leadership in this country. In Kenya at the moment, the running mate, of course, could potentially become the next president of this country. So through them, people see the likelihood, the potential of having a female president in the coming, who knows, 5 years or 10 years. So this has really energized the women voters, but also many other Kenyans, including men, who think this is really helping to change the look of leadership in this country. There are those who feel like a woman at that level will be good for the country because she might be more sensitive to certain issues that affect women and girls. And so it has become something that is very significant in this particular election.
Is this considered a breakthrough then for women in terms of entering the top echelon of Kenyan politics?
Indeed. In the past, of course, women have tried to get into the top echelons of the Kenyan politics. And years ago, there was a female presidential candidate, which was the very first time. Her name is Charity Ngilu, who until recently was serving as a governor. She's been in the cabinet, very high profile. And so it's not the first time a woman is going for the top position. In fact, that was a presidential candidate herself. But what people are seeing is that at least to see a man select a female as a running mate, it's quite some development in the country, because it has always been obvious that the running mate or the vice president of the country is a man. In the history of this country, there has never been like a deputy president or a vice president who was female. So while we may see women in the cabinet positions, but getting so close to the presidency is something that hasn't happened in the past. So people are seeing this as being very, very significant.
You've seen some of these campaign speeches, and I see pictures, too, where the female running mate stands next to the presidential candidate when he's making his speech. Do they ever turn the podium over to the woman? Does she speak?
Oh, they do speak. In fact, the running mate, for example, of Raila Odinga, Martha Karua, speaks quite a lot. She sometimes has gone to rallies just on our own to campaign alongside other women. So, in fact, they're not just standing next to presidential candidates as flower girls or so, no, so to speak. Actually, they have been very strong in the campaign trail. And the reason why they are given a chance to speak a lot, because it is believed that they will bring votes by speaking, because they make a case for why this presidency is going to be better because of me. They're not kind of there to support the presidential candidate only, but they're saying because of me, working with him will make a better government.
That's VOA Africa 54's Vincent Makori speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam from Nairobi earlier today. After more than 1,100 people died in violence following the 2007 Kenyan election, technology was proposed as a way of bolstering transparency around polls and reducing the delay in announcing results, a major source of tension. In the subsequent 2013 and 2017 elections, results were transmitted electronically and biometrics used to register voters and identify them on polling day. According to the French news agency AFP, biometric voter registration has been a success, boosting the electoral roll from 14.3 million in 2013 to 19.6 million in 2017 and 22.1 million in 2022. On election day, voters will provide their fingerprints for identification against a digital database before voting in a traditional manner using a pen and paper. Technology comes into play again when polling stations in Kenya close and votes are counted. To limit the possibility of fraud, the official form displaying the outcome from each polling station will be photographed and transmitted digitally instead of officials inputting the results manually, as was the case in 2017. The photographs are pooled at a constituency level, then forwarded to a national tally center, where they are cross-checked against the original forms, which are physically transported. Opposition politician Raila Odinga is making another bid for Kenya's presidency on Tuesday, but this time he has the support of former rival and outgoing president Uhuru Kenyatta, who has served the maximum 2 terms. VOA's Paul Ndiho reports.
Kenyans head to the polls to elect their next president on August 9th. Raila Odinga, the 77-year-old, long assumed to be the leader of opposition in Kenya, is contesting the elections for the 5th time. He has promised to focus on the cost of living if he becomes Kenya's next president.
The prices of grain, of fertilizer has gone on. The price of fuel has also gone up. And this has a telling effect on the cost of living of our people. We also are having some also other crises, some the issues of debt that we also having to face. We are confident that we can survive just like other countries are also surviving.
Odinga is touting his long experience in national leadership, including a stint as prime minister. But this time, he has the support of President Uhuru Kenyatta. Odinga and Kenyatta set their differences aside 4 years ago after a bitter dispute following the 2017 vote. The allegiance has increased the pressure on Kenyatta's deputy William Ruto. Tom Mboya, a governance consultant, says Odinga and his running mate Martha Karua are gaining momentum, especially after they have come out strongly on ending corruption.
I think the combination of those two personalities potentially leading a government that has articulated that it would seek to deal conclusively with corruption is something that many Kenyans find comforting and probably even leading a number of Kenyans to that side of the political divide.
Odinga's last 3 runs for office in 2007, 2013 and 2017, he led his supporters in protest at the outcomes or challenged them in court, saying his victories were stolen. Violent clashes have followed the 2007 and 2017 votes. Odinga and Ruto are battling it out on the campaign trail, especially in central Kenya, where Kenyatta's ethnic Kikuyu voters are up for grabs. Ruto was Odinga's ally in 2007 when the police cracked down on protesters, and clashes eventually turned into ethnic attacks that killed more than 1,000 people in post-election violence. Ruto also teamed up with Kenyatta in 2013. At least 22 million Kenyans are eligible to vote on August 9th.
Deputy President William Ruto is running in Kenya's August 9th presidential election on a platform of tackling corruption and growing the economy as the cost of living rises in the East African nation. David Doyle of Reuters reports.
Kenya's Deputy President William Ruto says he'll publish government contracts with China and deport Chinese nationals working in the country illegally. That's if he wins the top job in a presidential election on August 9th. The policies are designed to appeal to citizens pummeled by mounting debt and a skyrocketing cost of living.
We will put the brakes on more borrowing. It may not come to zero, but we will begin the journey to slow down on borrowing. Because they say when you find yourself in a hole, stop digging.
Kenya, which has a 2022 to 2023 budget of just under $28 billion, has a deficit of 6.2% of GDP and owes China about $8 billion. That debt has funded an infrastructure building spree under President Uhuru Kenyatta. The contracts are not public, and some Kenyan organizations have lodged court cases to try to force full disclosure of the deals. Ruto says his is an economic platform.
But that economic platform includes public resources, which means we have to tackle corruption head on, right? And in fact, in this election, we are probably the only team that has a plan on how to fight corruption.
His main rival, Raila Odinga, has also vowed to tackle corruption and the cost of living. Ruto has painted the election as a clash between hustlers and dynasties. The hustlers are Kenya's poorest, who he has vowed to lift up. Dynasties is a jab at Odinga. This is his fifth crack at the presidency. It's also a dig at Ruto's current boss, son of Kenya's former president, Jomo Kenyatta. Uhuru Kenyatta has backed Odinga in a bid to sideline Ruto, who the president describes as unfit for office.
A U.S.-UN statement indicates tomorrow Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield, U.S. representative to the United Nations, will deliver a keynote address in Accra, Ghana, on the global food security crisis, which is having particularly devastating consequences for the African continent. The speech, entitled A Visit for Peace and Food Security in Africa, will be live-streamed on Facebook and YouTube. Ambassador Thomas Greenfield is on a four-day trip to Uganda, Ghana, and Cabo Verde from August 4th to the 7th to affirm and strengthen the U.S.-Africa partnership and to discuss the disproportionate impacts of rising food insecurity and commodity prices on African countries, as well as a number of issues critical to regional peace and security. In Ghana, a key partner in the U.N. Security Council, Ambassador Thomas Greenfield, will meet with government and civil society leaders to discuss bilateral and regional security and political dynamics. She will visit the Kofi Annan International Peacekeeping Training Center to highlight the role of peacekeepers in international security. Additionally, the ambassador will meet with peace builders and traditional leaders working to strengthen community resilience, build social cohesion, and counter terrorism and violent extremism. Ambassador Thomas Greenfield will also deliver a speech in Ghana on the global food security crisis, and she will meet with farmers and civil society representatives who are contributing to food security and inclusive economic growth. To boost the UN forces' capability in Somalia, the U.S. has donated 24 armored vehicles. Mohamed Desain has the details from Mogadishu.
The handover, attended by U.S. Ambassador to Somalia, Larry Andre, and senior officials of the African Union Transition Mission in Somalia, ATMIS, took place Thursday in Somalia's capital, Mogadishu. The 24 armored personnel carriers, ABCs, donated by the U.S. government will boost the AU forces' capability to fight militant group Al-Shabaab. The specialized vehicles will be used by the AU Djiboutian contingent in joint military operations with the Somali National Army SNA in and around Beledweyne, the capital of Somalia's central region of Hiran. Ambassador Andre said the ABCs will protect troops against roadside bombs.
The expression of our support, amongst other ways, is the donation of these vehicles to help protect African Union forces, in this case, the Djiboutian military contingent, as they travel the roads of Somalia which too often are booby-trapped by dangerous explosive devices put there to harm those who only seek to help Somalia.
A top African Union official, Fiona Lawton, said the military hardware had arrived at an opportune time as the mission is reconfigurating its troops and equipment.
On behalf of the African Union, on behalf of its membership, on behalf of all the ATMIS TCCs, including Djibouti, but including all the others, because this is a collective effort. ATMIS is a collective effort of solidarity and support to the Somali people. I would like to thank you. I'd like to thank the government and people of the US for their generosity and for their steadfastness in supporting our presence in Somalia from the beginning.
Al-Qaeda-affiliated Al-Shabaab has been fighting Somalia's government and AU peacekeepers in Somalia for 15 years, seeking to install a strict Islamist state like the Taliban in Afghanistan. In May, the group attacked an ATMIS base in Somalia's Middle Shabelle region using suicide bombers, detonating three cars filled with explosives. Islamist fighters then bombed the facility with heavy gunfire and rocket-propelled grenades, killing several dozens African Union peacekeepers from Burundi. The military support by the U.S. comes as Somalia's new president, Hassan Sheikh Mohamud, announced that he is determined to wage war against Al-Shabaab militarily as well as on economic and ideological grounds. The Somali military said it conducted an operation against Al-Shabaab in Somalia's central Hiiran region this week, killing 30 Al-Shabaab fighters. In May, U.S. President Joe Biden authorized redeployment of U.S. troops to Somalia to help fight the militants. Biden's predecessor, Donald Trump, pulled around 700 American troops from the East African country during the final month of his presidency. Mohamed Daisane for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Please note we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. To complete the political, security, and electoral reforms so as to move the country forward, South Sudan's transitional leadership has decided to stay in power for another 24 months. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
South Sudan leaders said Thursday the country's transitional leadership will stay in power for another 24 months to complete the political, security and electoral reforms needed to move the country forward. Minister of Cabinet Affairs Martin Elia Lemuro, who made the announcement, said the decision to extend the mandate will help address the challenges that impede implementation of the 2018 peace deal that ended South Sudan's civil war. The 4.5-year civil war killed an estimated 400,000 people. Thursday's move is likely to anger the international community, which has not been happy with the leadership's inability to end the transitional period, which began in February 2020. The 2018 peace deal calls for security, judicial, constitutional and electoral reforms to stabilize the world's youngest country. Experts say the leadership has been slow to fully implement the proposed reforms. The South Sudan government, led by President Salva Kiir and his deputy Riek Machar, also postponed elections to 2023 and blamed the postponement for the lack of a permanent constitution. Civil society groups in South Sudan agree the situation on the ground, still volatile in parts of the country, does not permit a free, fair and peaceful election. Armed confrontation between the government forces, known as the South Sudan People's Defence Force, and the rebels, the South Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, have held up efforts to unify the security forces into one national army. Security experts say that unifying the divided security agencies would play a significant role in making the country a democracy and a stable state. In July, the United States pulled out of the country's peace process, saying the sides had failed to make the necessary reforms to end the political and security crisis. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
Britain has banned one of the world's biggest management consultancy firms for what it calls grave misconduct in South Africa. Earlier this year, a commission of inquiry found that Boston-based Bain & Company helped facilitate multi-million dollar corruption when Jacob Zuma was president. Darren Taylor reports.
State Capture Commission Chairman Judge Raymond Zondo's report says Zuma paid Bain millions of dollars to restructure South Africa's tax authority. It fired highly experienced revenue collectors, replacing them with officials who ensured the then president and his friends could allegedly commit tax fraud.
In Bain's case, the Zondo Commission said they acted unlawfully and referred it for prosecution because of the way that they dismembered the South African Revenue Service, SARS, and yet they continued to practice in London, in Washington, D.C., and elsewhere in the world as if nothing had happened in South Africa, if none of this corrupt, grubby behavior had happened at all.
Lord Peter Hain is a South African-born former British MP. He's been pressuring the UK government for 5 years to act against firms implicated in corruption in his homeland.
It should be a lesson to them that if you act unlawfully or corruptly, or if you act unethically in a country like South Africa that may seem far away from London or Washington, D.C. or Delhi or Beijing, then there will be consequences for you.
Baines acknowledged it made mistakes in South Africa, but denies knowingly being involved in corruption. In terms of the British ban, Bain will be barred from tendering for UK government contracts for the next 3 years. Hain describes this as a great start.
So I now want to see the American government under President Biden following suit, the Chinese government, the Indian government, the UAE government take similar action against all of these international brand names like Bain and others who made the money laundering and the corruption possible by working with former President Zuma in Bain's case directly.
In a statement, Bain said it would cooperate with any investigation into its conduct. It said it would make amends and restore its reputation.
What this decision shows is that the UK government is taking seriously the idea that Bain has shown professional misconduct. I think this should embarrass the South African government because it has had this information for years now and done nothing.
In 2018, Athol Williams was a senior partner at Bain in Johannesburg. He resigned and fled the country after he exposed the firm's alleged role in graft. Williams remains in hiding, fearing for his life. The UK ban on Bain also follows Williams' recent meeting with British Minister Jacob Rees-Mogg.
It was the first time a government official sat down and asked me to present the facts of the case. Not a single person in the South African government have asked me or contacted me. And this again shows the lack of engagement with what is happening in South Africa. Because I think the UK government understands state capture. They understand this isn't just bad contracts going back and forth. It was a sustained effort to undermine our democratic institutions. Bain is now shown to have been a part of that.
While the UK ban takes immediate effect, the African National Congress, ANC government, continues to award contracts to the company that allegedly helped Zuma perpetrate one of the biggest ever financial crimes. Hain says if President Cyril Ramaphosa cares about his country's future, he'll act against Bain and other implicated multinationals.
But otherwise, state capture is going to happen again in South Africa. We know that corruption is still very evident at all levels of government. It's going to happen again with the complicity of these global corporates earning big fees.
Pretoria says it'll consider its options with regard to Bain. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.